You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
Can green energy save the internet? Moderator was Joe Tasker, ITAA. Panelists included Andrew Fanara, Environmental Protection Agency, Dick Sullivan, EMC, and Larry Vertal, AMD.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe Tasker. I'm the General Counsel of the Information Technology Association of America, and welcome to the panel on green energy and whether green energy can save the internet. Maybe you didn't know it needed saving. We're going to figure out whether that's true or not as we go along. ITAA is an organization full of companies that build data centers, run data centers for other people, and build computers. So it's a pleasure for me to be moderating this panel this afternoon. I thought before we introduce the panelists, I'd talk for about, I hope, a couple of minutes only to set the stage for the issues that we're going to address in detail. We don't always focus on the fact that about 85% of all business information that's and government information that's created today is digital. It's not on paper anymore. And we don't back it up on paper very much. We rely on electronic data storage for our current information needs and for our archive needs to a greater and greater extent. We also impose more and more data retention requirements on our businesses through federal legislation from Sarbanes-Oxley to Gramm-Leach-Bliley in the financial sphere to the to HIPAA in the medical sphere. Now you can add to that the changes in the federal rules of civil procedure, which went into effect on December 1st and will have quite an effect on increasing the need to keep information electronically. And not only do we keep information electronically, of course, but then there's the internet. And we have enormous databases that run the net, the domain name system, enormous databases full of internet content, and enormous databases that are used for switching for the networks that that carry the internet in both commercial and home versions all around the world. As a result, there's an awful lot of computing power and an awful lot of data centers sitting out there working on the internet every day. And that means that power consumption and energy consumption are becoming bigger issues than they have in the past. Data centers are growing at not that much, 8% square foot per year, but they're growing in terms of their computing power about 20 to 25% a year. Today, a 50,000 square foot data center might consume 4 megawatts of power. Power consumption of 4 megawatts is enough to heat 2,000, you know, to power 2,500 homes. So it's a big number, and there are lots of data centers. In fact, press reports suggest that a lot of companies are now looking to site their new data centers in parts of the United States where the cost of power is the least expensive. And it is also reported that the cost of power consumption is now starting to outpace the cost of buying computing equipment within the data center on an annual basis. Data centers have become more dense with computers as computers have changed. If you remember the office tower, servers used to look like that. Now people talk about blades. What's a blade? A blade server is a little rack mount server. It's very thin, sits, stacks vertically, stacks horizontally. You get a lot more computers in the same space. And when you put a lot more computers in the same space, you get a lot more power consumption in the same space, and you get a lot more heat. So these are issues that have been reported in the press, discussed in the press, and more importantly, for our purposes, led to President Bush signing into law a bill at the end of the last Congress on December the 20th, announcing a six-month study of data center power consumption by the EPA Energy Star program. And we're happy to have one of EPA Energy Star's leading managers here to talk with us about that. We have three gentlemen who are expert in this field, to help us figure all this out. And I thought we would make some openings, ask them to each make an opening statement. Rather than introduce all three of them at the same time, I'll introduce them as we go along, except to say that we're represented here by the hardware side of the house, AMD, the software and services side of the house, who build the data centers, EMC, and in the middle, Andrew Fanara from the EPA. Did I say that
from
wrong?
From the government, yes.
From the government.
From the government.
Well, okay. Well, at least we have that perspective properly. Let's start with Larry. Larry Vertel is with Advanced Micro. You don't call it Advanced Micro Devices anymore, do you? It's just AMD. I'm showing my age.
We
now.
Call it AMD most of the time.
AMD is a major manufacturer of microprocessors and other semiconductors as well. And the microprocessor, of course, is the computing engine in all the computers today, from the large ones to the small ones, the handhelds to the towers to the servers to those blades we were talking about. And energy consumption and its partner, heat creation, are major concerns in the microprocessor world. And so AMD is very much involved in trying to manage these issues now and in the future. And I'd like Larry to start.
Okay. I'll give you a general AMD perspective on this. On this problem. Philosophically, the underlying assumption that this is a problem only occurs if we all agree that a continued improvement in the quality of life for people worldwide is a continued progress on what is provided by IT and information technology. I think that's an underlying assumption. If that isn't the case, we don't need these data centers. We don't need to continue the trend we're on. Having said that, and I think it's a fair assumption, why is this viewed as a problem? Just to amplify in some of Joe's comments, if you look at the situation today, U.S., we're probably spending about $3.3 billion for electricity to run data centers right now, roughly, is my reasonable estimate. And the number of servers in data centers are expected to increase by 50% in the next 4 years. A data center, 100,000 square foot data center today, about $25 million to build, roughly. And that's at a power density. I'm sorry to go this far technical, but power density of roughly 40 to 60 watts per square foot. With the increased density that we're seeing trends upward that, if you extrapolate, would lead us to 200 watts per square foot. This is problematic in the entire stack of the data center. Traditionally, and I'll just use the AMD perspective here because we're about processors and process, traditionally the processor itself could actually be accused of resulting in about 30% of that power. Not just the power the processor was using, but the cooling and related elements on the processor. Fortunately, thanks to innovations, we've broken Moore's Law to a certain degree. Moore's Law basically increasing compute power, and the parallel to that was energy was just going to be increasingly used by the processor as well. What we've done is we've broken that to where the process, we are getting increased compute power from the processor, but we're using less power to get that throughput. Okay, now here's the advertising. An example is AMD's server processors. AMD's server processors, single core, that means one brain in the chip. AMD's dual core processors, two brains in the chip. And then the upcoming quad-core processors have exactly the same power envelope. 4X the cores, same power envelope. Having said that, we believe that the pure CPU or pure semiconductor component of this is actually going down in terms of its total contribution to the problem. This is not to say we've done our part, thank you, it's everybody else's problem, but rather that things are being addressed in this area. I think a key point here from an AMD perspective is understanding why these data centers are becoming such an issue right now. I would argue that there is a trend out there that, and it follows on some of Joe's points, that more and more you are seeing data and the real computing being done in data centers. If you think of the long-term trends, BlackBerry, I'm sure everybody in Washington knows what this is. I understand they run the federal government. This is, in a sense, an edge device, or what we call in the industry an edge device. It doesn't set my clothes on fire when I wear it. It doesn't use a lot of power. The power consumption is being concentrated, and the computing is being concentrated at the data centers themselves. This is what leads to the issues around data centers. Additionally, I would posit that this is actually a good thing. If you think of the massive energy used by all computing devices, the concentration to a certain degree of the total amount of energy being used for computing and for improved quality of life, allegedly, I don't know about that, but is actually being concentrated in a narrower area that makes it easier to address, both by private industry and in conjunction with working with government agencies and NGOs. Enough for me. Okay. Intro.
Okay, thanks, Larry. That's a good start. Now, I'd like to introduce Dick Sullivan. Dick is with EMC. You know, the perspective here is that data centers, historically, the data center has to run 24/7. Can't go down. Data center goes down, you're in deep trouble. And the goal of the IT department is to keep the data center running. And if the data center doesn't run, you know, the data center runs or your job is over. It's a real career-limiting move when a data center goes down. In fact, I've heard more than one CIO, chief information officer of companies and government agencies alike, saying that because of their data center responsibilities now, CIO stands for career is over because there's so much risk involved. Well, putting that in perspective, let me introduce Dick. He is, as I said, with EMC Corporation. EMC is the largest provider of data storage and information infrastructure technologies in the world, providing the core technologies that the Internet's largest and most powerful data centers are built on. Two decades ago, EMC began a focused effort to design storage platforms that were the most energy efficient in the market. And today, with a core competency in data center design and information management, EMC understands the infrastructures that power the Internet. In other words, they build data centers for themselves, they build data centers for their clients, they run data centers. And so we shift now from the perspective of the device manufacturer, the hardware manufacturer, to the data center operator. Dick?
Thanks, Joe. Let me start with the premise of the title of this session. In fact, I do believe very much that there is a need for us to deal with what essentially is a crisis in the data center in terms of energy. One only has to pick up USA Today to see that it's a larger problem. But I think that here the focus has been, from EMC's perspective, on how this impacts information technology and the use of information technology by our customers. It is, in fact, a very immediate problem in that we have customers who have already come to us and said energy supply, certainly cost, but even more importantly, energy supply in my data center has become a critical issue. We have customers who right now must unplug something before they can plug in a new piece of gear. We have a recent survey of our own global customers that said at least 77% of them consider data center energy to be a critical issue. And our question at the results of those surveys is what happened to the other 23%, because we expect that they're going to come back pretty soon.
Yep.
Let me give you a very specific example. We had a major financial customer in New York City who had constructed a data center with the idea of it being 100 watts per square foot, which, as was mentioned earlier, that's actually sort of a large capacity data center in terms of the electricity consumption. They are now running that data center at approximately 200 watts of electricity per square foot, only 2 years after it was constructed. They are now constructing another data center to replace that existing center, which is designed at 500 watts per square foot. So it gives you some idea of what they think the scale and the trajectory is going to be in terms of energy consumption. These are businesses that see their ability to actually conduct business as being very much associated with their information technology requirements. Think about the financial services industry and stock trades, et cetera. And they realize that unless they can solve this problem, their businesses will not be able to grow and thrive in the way that they wanted to. So think about this not only as an issue inside the data center, think of it as having long-term and fairly significant economic impact issues in terms of not only the U.S., but the global economy, because after all, nearly all of these companies are global companies. How does this relate back to the internet? Well, think about some of the things that relate to the internet that, as was mentioned earlier, are applications that happen today that didn't happen before. You go to the doctor, you get an x-ray, that x-ray is no longer on film, it's digital, it can be sent across the country via the internet for your next consultation. You go to the library, use the card catalog, except you don't use the card catalog anymore, it's actually electronic. And again, it's on the internet and you have interlibrary loans. All of it happens electronically. You go to the record store. Oh, no, wait, you don't go to the record store anymore, do you? Right? You go to iTunes and you download a song, or these days you download a movie, so pretty soon you're not going to go to the movies either. All of those things and other things that didn't even exist a few years ago that aren't being replaced but are simply new technology, like cell phones and all of the bills that they create and all of the records keeping that they require. There are huge amounts of information technology directly associated with the internet, but also directly associated with the global economy. And so I would contend, and I think that EMC has already tried to take a leadership position in the marketplace to contend that this is an issue that has an impact far beyond the limits of the physical data center. The other thing that's actually a bit bothersome about this is that in many instances it was either understood and then ignored, or it was unexpected. So, again, an example of one of our own customers who said, you know, I didn't worry about energy efficiency, I didn't worry about how much energy cost or how much it was supplied because it's not in my budget. Well, he's the IT guy. The facilities guy and the IT guy don't talk to each other until the IT guy says, I have this new gizmo that's just arrived on my dock, I want to plug it in, and the facilities guy says, you can't do it, there's no more juice. The other thing that happens is in some instances it's been ignored. There was a story recently in the one of the congressional weeklies that detailed a government agency that had known about the problem for some time but simply hadn't bothered to do anything about it. And now all of a sudden they've hit a critical juncture where they can no longer do their job. The size of the data centers has also increased. We talked about what the megawatt per data center is. Well, you can get to large and very large. Mm-hmm. Think about the NSA right now. They're running at about 70 megawatts. They're looking to increase the amount of electricity that they put into that facility by another factor to bring them up to probably about 100 megawatts. That's at least enough to power 100,000 homes. So you're talking about a city. And then finally, not to be too gloomy about all this, yes, it's a big problem, and yes, there are far-reaching implications for it, But I think that there are a number of things that we can do right now to remedy the issue. In some respects, it's new technology, and I think that, we as Americans are always going to rely upon our ingenuity to improve the technology and to come up with things that will improve the situation that we're currently in. However, there are lots of things that can be done right now, today, that using the existing technology or implementing some more recent technologies in new ways that will allow us to actually have a very significant impact on mitigating the issue, at least in the near term.
So, thanks, Dick. Our third member of the panel is Andrew Fanara. Andrew is with the Environmental Protection Agency Energy Star program. The Energy Star program has been at EPA since the early 1990s, and it is designed to educate consumers and businesses about energy-efficient products of all sorts, to develop standards and benchmarks that producers can make to meet an energy efficiency goal, and if they do, they can display the Energy Star mark on their products, their packaging. I bet a lot of the computers you've seen, a lot of other products now, it started with PCs. A lot of products that you see have the E-Star label, and those meet the Environmental Protection Agency Energy Star program standards. Andrew is the head of the specifications group.
Yes.
And the specifications group works particularly with manufacturers of products on coming up with energy efficiency standards and specifications that help reduce the energy consumption of products. And then Andrew and his team also work with manufacturers once the standards are developed to get them to actually produce, to build stuff to meet those standards and offer them in the marketplace. It's a continuing evolution of products that he works with. In addition, Andrew is the team leader of the six-month study that was signed into law by President Bush at the end of the last Congress. I think I mentioned it is, I guess it's H.R. 56.
50. Oh, you put him in a
well,
spot.
Never mind.
5646.
5646, if you 5646. Are keeping score, thank you. It's an interesting and important piece of legislation. We'd like Andrew to talk about that, but also to make his opening statement, and then we'll open the discussion to questions.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much, Joe. It's good to be here, and looking forward to chatting about this particular topic. You always sit down at these panels and think you have a line of thought that you want to take and things you want to say, and then you hear people say things and I'm scribbling notes and trying to think where to start. But let me see if I can pull back for a second and put things in perspective a little bit. The EPA's Energy Star program is designed to make it easy for consumers, businesses, to make smart decisions about buying or smart decisions about factoring energy into the buying decision. That's something that, frankly, we here in the U.S. and in other countries are not very good at. We don't really understand energy very much. We don't know the difference between a watt in power, energy, et cetera, et cetera. And so Energy Star attempts to make it very easy. And I have to admit, during the first few years when I started working at Energy Star, given that energy was not as expensive as it is today, and given the issues that are associated with it now, mostly geopolitical, it was hard to make the case to businesses that they should care about it. And, of course, you always had folks who thought it was a good thing. But nonetheless, I think in the area of IT, in particular for folks that run data centers, I think there are really two really important critical things that are happening here and that we see every day. And I would agree with Dick that there is a crisis in the data center if you run a data center. And that's because, on the one hand, your energy cost to actually power the hardware and to subsequently cool it are no longer a rounding error on your financials. And given, frankly, right, the somewhat crude methods that are used to cool these products, and I realize that's maybe a little bit of a strong term, but you see very sophisticated products, and you see products, or you see the means to cool them that don't do service to the products, I think. And so cooling them and powering them is growing dramatically, and the ability to keep up with that is slipping away. And when you consider that data centers really are at the heart of all technical innovation in many respects, commerce increasingly, our scientific advancement, our quality of life, increasingly communications, entertainment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this is only growing to be the case. But there's really two things happening. If you're running a data center and you want to be more competitive as a business, and businesses always are trying to do more with less, you clearly want to reduce your energy consumption because it can have a real impact on your bottom line, and you don't want to go to the CFO to ask for more money to blow out a wall or build another data center, because if you happen to be a financial services firm in New York City, well, you just can't build a data center anywhere. Same thing as if you happen in many metropolitan areas of the country. There's a land cost, and there's all of those sorts of things. Not everybody can move their data center to an abandoned aluminum factory off the Columbia River. So so for the 99.9% of the other folks who run data centers, they have real challenges. And the great thing is by applying energy efficiency strategies and managing your data centers better, you can run a much more cost-effective operation. You can stave off the need for adding more air conditioning, et cetera. And what you can also do is if you care about the carbon footprint of your company, if you mm-hmm. care increasingly about climate change and things of that nature, there are very easy, low-cost ways in which to make an impact by applying energy efficiency as a strategy in the data center. So Energy Star really is to make it easy for people across lots of different product areas. And my mandate extends to look at any product, whether commercial or residential in nature, that uses energy, and to work with the industry to see if we can find a way to help customers make smarter decisions about energy consumption. We've done that with, I think, a great deal of success. And I have to say, in many of those areas, there were significant challenges in getting manufacturers to care about it. That's not the case with the IT industry, I think in part because I feel like they can engineer their way out of anything. And they work fast and they're dynamic, and so it's a good industry to work with. And then, of course, I think that they want to be at the cutting edge of helping with the climate issue. And increasingly, if you watch the news and you read the op-eds, you increasingly see guys who made their bones in the tech world increasingly involved in energy issues. And I think that that's an interesting dynamic, and I think will have an impact going forward. So as Joe mentioned, I've been tasked with writing a report that will report to Congress basically what's happening in the data center with respect to the energy issues and what are those growing energy issues, what are the impacts on national energy consumption, because at the end of the day, Energy Star, as well as policymakers from on the Hill and everywhere else, are looking to turn over every stone possible to find cost-effective means to reduce energy use, and energy efficiency is the cheapest, cleanest way to do that. So there's a lot of talk about biofuels. There's a lot of talk about nuclear. Lots of things that are very sexy and get a lot of attention when it comes to energy. But if you're a data center operator, you really have only a few strategies that you can employ in the very near term. And so hopefully our study will do just a couple basic things, and then I'll wrap up. Basically, we want to set a level playing field for the likes of equipment manufacturers to compete on efficiency. We want them to be able to do that in a way that makes sense and in a way that allows their customers to compare efficiency from one manufacturer's equipment to the next. And that's the whole purpose of what Energy Star does. So I'll leave it at that and turn it back to you, Joe.
Okay, thanks, Andrew. I have some questions for the panel, but before we get to those, let's ask first if anybody in the audience has a question. Yes, sir.
Question, I guess, to the panel, particularly for AMD. There was an announcement by Intel about a week ago, quickly followed by an announcement by IBM and, I believe, by AMD.
Right.
About the new chip technology that
yeah.
would dramatically decrease power consumption in what was, at least in the press, Dollywood as a revolutionary impact.
Right.
A lot of focus, obviously, on mobile devices,
Well, it was press announcements, and I'll give you our perspective on that. And I think that I hopefully will not bore you excessively. The move to, and this announcement, for those that didn't read it, was basically about, in going to 45 nanometers, which is increasing the density of the chip, reducing the size of the chip, that AMD, Intel, IBM, who is our partner on this, by the way, IBM, would be going to, polysilicon and hafnium. Pretty exciting, huh?
You'll be a quiz. No,
but to your point, yes, it is important because it is part of the roadmap that we, frankly, have been all on for quite a while to get to 45 nanometers. What, for those of you in the room, currently today, the highest performance processors are done at 90 nanometers and 65 nanometers. If you have a really good architecture, like AMD has, you can do a lot of 90 nanometer stuff and then roll in 65 nanometers. If you have, shall we say, a less optimal architecture, you have to get your advantages by constantly doing shrinkages faster. So this is a significant announcement, and it's part of continuing to break the trend between how much throughput you get versus how much energy you use. Having said that, we've all been planning to do this for a long time. And it is only one of a series of things that are being done at the processor level. In the case of, for example, AMD, I'll use that as an example, we use what's called silicon on insulator technology. I think we're unique in the processor arena in that way, that actually additionally reduces power demands, as well as some certain types of things called strained silicon, which helps as well. All of these, it's a tool set that we use. And so the framing of the announcement is significant because it is a major change in process technology for the semiconductor industry. However, it was being planned by all of us for quite a while. I can tell you that in the generations beyond that, 32 nanometers that's being planned, things like that, AMD is doing some very interesting things on how to trick electrons into thinking they even have a shorter wavelength.
Well, Larry, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Let me try this on you. What does this mean for energy consumption? Does this mean that, you know, you can read that announcement and say,
game over.
Game over, yeah.
It's not game over.
We're just, you know, we solved the problem with technology. Thanks, we can all go home now.
No. Much like I said earlier, this helps us keep on the track and not increase our contribution to the problem. It does not solve the problem. Because the problem's fundamentally, and I think Dick highlighted this well, and his company is very aware of this. This problem is a complex stack. Starts at the processor, goes to the server level, meaning the device with disk drives in it and all that. Then you've got crack units, HVAC units, the supply side of the entire data center. So what this announcement really means is the semiconductor side looks like it's on track for continued improvements in useful throughput. But that's only a small piece of the data center problem.
Okay. Well, let's talk. Let me ask Dick then. Unless somebody else have a follow up. Okay.
Yeah. I guess.
Well, why don't, if you don't mind, let me ask Dick. Since we heard what the silicon contribution is here, one of the big, we've defined a problem, and we've heard what, you know, that the next evolution in semiconductors may certainly help somewhat. But, Dick, you guys are involved much more in the construction, operation, maintenance of data centers. What else is going on today to mitigate the problem, or are we all waiting for the EPA to tell us what to do?
Which question do you want me to answer first?
How about the first one?
What are we doing?
I think
that there are a couple of things. One is that if you look in the press, what you'll find is that servers have been very much in the spotlight. And so one of the reasons why people are very interested in this recent announcement is because servers have been one of the key sources of energy consumption and heat contribution to the data center. A couple of things that don't necessarily bubble up here. One is that if you look at all of the IT-related energy consumed in a data center, only about 30, or if you stretch it, maybe even 40% of the energy consumed is actually consumed by the IT components.
Exactly.
About 70% of it is consumed by the power handling units, yep, by the air conditioning, and by the lights and alarm systems in the building.
Yep.
So there are big chunks of the electricity consumed by a data center that have to be looked at in places other than on the chip.
Right.
The other thing is that if you come to specifically the storage part of this, we have people who will go and try to help customers understand how to best deal with their data and their overall data consumption and how they deal with data storage. And what we find is that in many instances, about 70% of the data that customers are storing on their so-called production systems, in other words, their high-profile, high-energy-consuming systems, 70% of it hasn't been touched in the last 90 days.
That's right.
So what we're finding is that there's a tremendous inefficiency in the way that people are using the data center and the IT equipment, and certainly there are inefficiencies in the gear itself. But in many respects, the complexity of this comes not so much in the gear, but in how people apply the utility of that gear to whatever their purpose is. And I think it's a combination of those things, along with the criticality of the data, which is another important factor that has to be put into this equation. And it very much is an equation. It's not sort of a point in time. It's an equation of how do we get to an energy result that we want. If I have a less critical data center and a more critical data center, I'm going to have a spectrum of power consumption that can be considerable in terms of the cost of the construction of that data center, from simple at about $2 million to more complex at about $35 million to very complex to about $100 million. So there's that. And also, each of those steps up is going to consume more energy, but I'm getting something for it. So what's the benefit, the value-benefit ratio that I'm getting out of that? I think that what that comes down to in my mind is that there are still clearly things that we have at our disposal right now in terms of, say, I'll go back to that 70% of the data isn't accessed within 90 days. Just change that.
Mm-hmm.
Just that one thing. And you can have a considerable impact on the amount of energy that you're
consuming. If I could make just some comment, Dick,
on the side of the industry that you see, I know that in our large customers, because we're a very customer-oriented company as well, we get a lot of our feedback from our designs from our customers. I mean, one of the things that we've seen in the large data centers is, I'll call it a siloing between traditional IT, the people that worry about the information, and data center management.
Mm-hmm.
That in many cases in these corporations, the people that actually manage the data centers are maybe in the real estate division of the corporation,
absolutely,
whereas IT reports to the CIO. Now, this might sound strange to the audience, but what we've found is in many cases merely working with companies to link together IT and the facilities management,
yes,
allows them to address the overall power problem.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, can I just say one quick thing,
sure,
to that, though? I think that's a good point, because I think many people, when they think about energy, they think that folks have to make tremendous sacrifices in their quality of life or in the way in which they do business in order to get energy savings and potential benefits. Most of the time, it requires coordination within an organization to do things more effectively,
yeah,
which requires no sacrifice whatsoever. So, that's one of the themes of energy efficiency. We don't have to give a lot up in order to make tremendous gains in this sector or other sectors.
Let's turn to the floor now, and we have about 15 minutes left. So you know, if we could watch the time of our answers as well as the time of our questions. Yes.
The point that you made about sort of facilities planning was interesting. I was hearing this, and you know, even just the term energy consumption. Of course, energy isn't consumed; it's turned into heat, and people pay a lot of money to heat stuff.
Right.
So I'm wondering, you know, is there anything, you know, people also looking at sort of designs that you can take advantage of the heat that your equipment is.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, in our report, we're going to touch on the potential for combined heat and power.
Right.
And some of the things there that you can do when you're designing a data center to take advantage of all the heat that's thrown off. Now, I personally believe that it's most cost effective to not create the heat in the first place because then you don't have to displace it. But if you go down that path, there are folks smarter than myself who can engineer a good solution. So, but you make a good point.
And within the equipment engineering community, certainly there's a lot of interest in that. I think we are in agreement that it's better not to create the heat, but once you've created it, damn, is there some way that I can use it?
Right.
That's really what we're looking at.
I take that approach with my computer in my
bedroom. Well, it's not the most effective way, the most cost-effective way to create heat either.
A little space heater, huh?
Right. So.
Yes.
When I was reviewing HR 5646, while I saw the component about energy consumption with regard to processors and more, it seemed to me that the scope of the study that's set forth is broader than that with regard to power consumption by data centers. And I guess my question is, are you going to be getting into questions of location, impact on power grids, impact on communities where you're putting facilities? Should you be putting facilities where you get cheap
hydro? Right, I got you. Yeah, exactly. The scope is somewhat limited, but within the context of the bill, the language does give us some freedom to sort out some of these issues and prioritize them to some degree. The report's going to be 9 or 10 technical chapters with a summary up front, and it's going to be broad in nature, and it's going to also recommend some other key areas for research beyond the scope of the report, but it is going to hit on some key things that we think are important. The energy supply chain is one of them, and in certain parts of the country, data centers are a more significant contributor to grid reliability or lack of reliability than in other parts of the country. So most major metropolitan areas, certainly you want efficiency because the only other alternative, frankly, is to spend a lot more money on enhancing the quality of the grid, which takes money, which has got to come from somewhere, which will come in the form of higher electricity rates. So things are not free. So efficiency is the cheapest way to go down that path to sustain your infrastructure as long as possible.
Right.
So it'll be broad, and we actually have if you leave us your card, we'll send you a draft outline of the report.
Yes.
Displacing transportation or things of that nature.
But
yeah.
Just looking at how people use energy and managing their energy use in more intelligent ways.
Mm, that's also true.
I just wondered if any of you had a comment on that.
I have one very brief one, and that is that part of what we have begun to realize in terms of the discussion we've just been having is that we within IT need much better mechanisms to monitor and manage the power consumption inside the data center.
Yes.
As we're developing those tools and resources, I think that it's already been realized that they are extendable.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start out by focusing on the data center, but it's not long before you could use them to manage the power in your home.
Yeah.
for example.
I would.
And that there are other uses that they can be put to. We're still in the relatively early stages of that set of mm-hmm. discoveries.
Oh, I would just say that as a general matter, I mean, the power of IT as an analytical tool is sometimes not fully comprehended. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. the world we live in today is a world that couldn't exist before the advent of the computing power that we have now. Things can be managed that used to take 100 years to calculate. You can calculate them while we're having this panel in like that. And when you have that kind of analytical power, there are already now studies that suggest that, you know, we used to argue about whether IT actually contributed to productivity or not. I'm old enough to remember the days when the chairman of the Federal Reserve was not, you know, altogether sure that all these computers on desks right. were actually contributing to productivity, and now there's no question. And industries across the board, as they move into the world of IT and start running their businesses in an information-centric way, become more productive. And there's a lot of academic stuff out there, not just in terms of energy efficiency, but everything. So you are absolutely right.
Could I make one brief comment?
You can.
I'll attempt to be brief.
I do want to get to the one central question that I still have on, but please.
One of the follow-ups I wanted to do was on, I think something Dick said is really important, and that is that we have at our hands today a lot of the tools available to address this problem immediately. And one of the examples that comes to my mind is, and again, I look at it from the level of the chip. There is a technology called virtualization. If you think of a data center, a lot of servers in them, many of them underutilized, not being working all the time. Virtualization technology basically allows these processors to be more fully utilized because the IT software thinks that there's more servers out there than there really are. And on a very high level, that's what it's about. And it has a direct impact on these factors in a data center when it's utilized. That's probably why EMC owns VMware, which is a part of their corporation.
Thank you for the plug.
Well, it's a deserved plug. I mean, believing that you've got to walk the talk, I mean, AMD itself, in going through one of its own data centers where we implemented virtualization in one of our own data centers, were able to reduce, in one case, 135 servers down to, I think it was about 7, with a 78% reduction in energy usage by using proper virtualization attributes in our processors combined with the software. So to Dick's point, there are things available today that the industry is attempting to implement to address this problem.
Great.
And that is actually a typical example, and perhaps to reinforce that, and Andrew, you may be aware of this, that Pacific Gas and Electric actually has a rebate yep. program that they give to their customers in Northern California when they do conservation of energy,
yep.
and they are now basically allowing the VMware implementations to
yep.
get credit for that. So customers are doing VMware implementations and essentially offering proof to PG&E that they've saved sufficient amount of energy to actually get up to a $4 million rebate.
Yep.
Great. Now, I saved the Washington question for last, which is this. Let's put the question of government regulation on the table and ask the panelists to discuss it. Let me tell you a little prelude. The Energy Star program, is a voluntary labeling program. It's not a regulatory program. But at the same time, at least in the world of PCs on desktops, it is a program that President Clinton announced was a government preference for procurement on Earth Day in 94?
I think so.
Or 95? 96. And, of course, when it became a government procurement preference, then it started to show up as a government procurement requirement for the GSA schedule, for a lot of other procurement vehicles. So there's a fine line between voluntary and regulatory here. And I think we have time. I'd like all of our panelists, and Andrew, you can start, or
okay,
if you'd like to speculate along with me whether we're heading down a path toward data center regulation here.
It's a good question. I've been asked it quite a bit. From our perspective, we think that this particular industry and these particular products don't lend themselves well to regulation. The industry moves too quick, products change too fast, and it would be difficult. Increasing prices of energy will be self-regulating. It will provide enough pain because we have to remember the amount of energy consumed in the world is going to double in the next 25 years. Demand will double. And that is a lot of that will come in the developing world. A lot of that will come here, but we do live in a world market for energy in many respects. So there will be increased demand. I think we feel like we want to write technology-neutral specifications. We don't care what chip is in a box or what storage is in a box. We don't care about that. We'd like to write system specifications and let competition take care of itself in this particular market, which I think is very well suited for that. So Energy Star has not got any designs on regulation.
I am heartened by that. I thought that was the answer, and I'm glad to hear it was. Either of the other so if you want to, I mean, I can't imagine that we would that you would promote regulation, either one of you.
So I'd like to say start by saying I agree. in fact, I think that it is fairly obvious that because of the very nature of the IT industry and how fast it moves, that the wisest thing is to set objectives and goals. For example, in terms of, we would like to see a decrease in the amount of energy used, but at the same time, that the way that is done be left to be very flexible, because quite frankly, we already know that we have technologies that are on the drawing board right now that within 6 to 12 months will allow us to have an impact on energy consumption. We already know that we have processes that are available right now that with a fairly limited amount of refinement can have a very significant mm-hmm. impact on energy consumption. And so I think that the key thing is to make sure, and here's where I think we think that there is a tremendous role for the government to play, and that is simply education.
Yep.
The fact is that it's disappointing in some respects that so many people didn't understand that this problem is as bad as it is. And to the extent that people can be educated as to not only the severity, but really more what some of the ways are in which they can either mitigate or eliminate this as a problem, that really is important. And to the extent that the government and industry together can work on that, I think that could be very significant.
Larry, you have any?
Needless to say, I agree. But let me give you some data points that should be encouraging to all on the cooperation that's already occurring between government agencies, if I'm using the term correctly, and private industry. EPA, in particular, began a server metrics project in cooperation with private industry. I'm proud to say that I think AMD was one of the first companies to get involved in that, but it's broad spread. And that is basically a project designed to come up with metrics to be able to measure the performance of server systems, taking into account the power used to make that, to do that work. That's one example that the industry is working with EPA. Another data point would be about a month and a half ago at AMD headquarters in Sunnyvale, all of Silicon Valley came. You name a major company, they were probably present, including Intel. Imagine Intel showing up at AMD's headquarters to meet with the Assistant Secretary of Energy of the DOE to start developing together ideas on how DOE labs can be used in conjunction with the private industry initiatives to address these problems. So my view is a bit Pollyannish on this, in that you are seeing competitors in this industry getting together on a business side to work with the relevant agencies of the federal government Because the difficulty with regulation is to, I think it was Andrew's point, this industry morphs so quickly, it's like trying to decide what the Terminator looks like this week. It's morphing from you know, mercury into this, that, and the other. And the difficulty around regulation is that it could, because the industry morphs so constantly, regulation itself could have unintended consequences.
Well, all true. And absolutely important to keep in mind as we go forward. This has been the mantra of the IT industry for as long as I've been involved in it, which was the mid-1980s. And it was true then, it's true now. I guess, anybody else have any final questions before we quit?
Yeah, I'm wondering, when you talk about virtualization and its ability to save power, and that, a lot of stuff being stored in power and memory and having a touch in 90 days. But I'm wondering, to what extent is the incremental load on the server affect energy consumption? A PC, it spins down the disk if you haven't used a disk for a while. Can you build a processor that also shuts off certain, one of the cores, if it's not doing
the answer is absolutely yes. I mean, I can speak to AMD's processors today. AMD's processors have multiple states that allow software to link back in based on the requirements of the load so that the processors themselves downstep how much energy they're using, how much power is required to match the load needed. So those are underway today. Additionally, I can tell you that there's projects underway to be able to allow signals from software to allow the hardware to interpret it and actually shut down portions of the silicon, not even from an idle state, but just shut it off if not needed in milliseconds.
The VMware software takes advantage of that now,
yep.
and if you have a bank of 12 servers and it's nighttime and you don't need all 12, it can shut two of them off.
Yep.
So it basically manages that server base to see to it that it is maximally utilized. The common metric for utilization of servers right now is somewhere on the order of 10-15%. At peak load, perhaps as high as 30%, but here we can get much higher utilization from a much smaller number. They are admittedly larger servers, but the net is a tremendous energy decrease, and the number that was used in 80% is not unachievable. We have actually measured that in the field.
Just to give you a little historical perspective, what these gentlemen are describing are actually major technological advances in the last 10 years. Mm. When I was involved in the early 1990s, computers, PCs basically were either on or off. And somebody said, well, how much energy does it take to, to run a spreadsheet? And the answer was, well, it's on. and it's always on unless you turn it off. And, whether the microprocessor is sitting there cycling or whether the microprocessor is sitting there cycling and crunching numbers, it's still sitting there cycling. So the very idea that they're describing, they make it sound quite commonplace, but it is actually a technological advance worth noting. I want to...
How do you interpret the statistic that 70% of the data hasn't been touched for 90 days? Is that... data that's on a server with a disk spinning?
That's correct.
Yep.
It's not very sophisticated power.
Well, but think about your own PC. You've got 80 gigabytes of data on there, and in the last 90 days, you've probably only touched a very small percentage of it. The rest of those files exist. You're just not using them.
Yeah, you can. You can look and see when you last modified the file or when you last touched the file. There's software that'll do that for you. If there are no other questions, I'd like to leave you with one kind of what to my mind is a slightly troubling thought, which is that, as you think about data centers, remember that we're building them not just in the United States but in a lot of the rest of the world now.
Yeah.
And that this is, when we think about increased power consumption in places like China and India, probably a lot of people's minds think about go to automobiles and homes and, you know, in office buildings and such, but it's also all about data centers. And whether the power grids in the developing world are capable of handling increased data centers is something you are going to hear more about as the years go by. And it's already starting to. We had did some work in India at the end of last year, and that was already on the agenda for American companies and Indian companies doing business in India. So this is something that you'll hear more about. Andrew is hard at work on his study, as well as he's doing lots of other things at the same time. I understand is there a formal comment period or?
Well, there is a workshop in Santa Clara on the 16th, Santa Clara, California. If you give me your email address, we'll put you on the list if you want to be updated. And certainly, this has gotten the attention of a lot of folks as green power and the climate agenda has heated up, for lack of a better term, and it seems like there's a lot of interest in it. So please stay in touch.
Great, and I hope you all will stay in touch. We thank you for your attention, and good afternoon.